As you know, like
Yeah.
Michigan has 100 graduate programs in the top 10.
Yes, we do.
If we put all of you together in a group, that is like, I don't follow a lot of Marvel movies. So
The
who's,
Avengers.
yeah,
The
like,
Avengers.
yeah, so
That's
you've got all
Iron
the different,
Man, Thor, all of them together. Yeah.
right, you've got all these superpowers together and you're like unbeatable.
Hello, and welcome to Business Beyond Usual. My name is Marjay Smiles. Today, I wanted to do something a little bit different for you all. You hear a lot from our students on this show about their experiences and what they like about the MBA program. What we don't get a lot of is thoughts from our faculty. So that's what we're going to do today. I took my recorder and stopped by some office hours for professors I've had in the last 2 years who have left an impression on myself. We're going to hear about their research and their teaching, but also I wanted to learn a little bit more about who they are as a person. Before we get there, though, I want to encourage you to subscribe to Business Beyond Usual and leave us a review or a comment. It's great to hear what you all think about the show, and it lets us know what you want to hear from us in the future. You can also send us an email at bbupodcast@umich.edu. Once again, that's bbupodcast@umich.edu. All right, first up is my conversation with Professor John Branch. He's a marketing professor who has a lot of experience and expertise in the marketing field. He's also, I learned, building a car from scratch. Yes, that's from scratch, people. Very impressive. After that, I spoke with Professor Jerry Davis. He's an associate dean here at Ross, focusing on what's called our Business Plus Impact Initiative, which is all about how the business world is meeting the most important challenges of our time. That's no small feat, and my conversation with him is, it's a wild ride, so stay tuned for that. Okay, here's my conversation with Professor Branch. Is Professor John Branch on this floor?
Yes, he's on that.
That side. Thank you. Professor!
Hey!
How's it going?
I'm okay, how are you? Look at that.
Yeah, we're fancy, right? How's it going?
I'm okay.
Yeah?
I'm exhausted. I'm jet-lagged. I just got back from a trip.
Where'd you come from?
I was in India, Sri Lanka, and Thailand. I got home yesterday.
That's quite a trip.
I've been up since quarter after 12. I'm feeling a little bit...
Yeah? Goofy. Was that business or pleasure?
Business, oh. Pleasure, business.
Very cool.
Yeah. What about you? Why are you here?
I just got back from Spain. It was beautiful.
It was not Spain trek, was it?
No.
just went for a holiday?
Yeah, well, my wife's birthday was over the spring break, and so we were deciding what to do, and she wanted to go to Spain, so...
And you love her, so...
And I love her, so I said yes. can we stop? Just tell us your name and your title.
Sure. So, it's great to see you. My name is John Branch. I am a clinical assistant professor of marketing. I'm also the co-director of the YAFI Digital Media Initiative here at the Ross School of Business, University of Michigan in lovely Ann Arbor, Michigan. Go Blue!
Go Blue! Awesome. Well, we are in your office right now.
Yep.
For those who can't see, can you just, as like an icebreaker, talk to me about your office? Every time I went to a professor's office, I think it's so interesting. It's them. In a nutshell, I feel at least, but...
So, yes, I think my office reflects my personality. First off, you'll see that my office is absolutely full of mementos, mm-hmm. particularly mementos from all of my international travels and my international life. I spend a lot of time in my office, so I want it to be comfortable and I want it to reflect who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So you see a couple of the shelves there. I've got my bust of Lenin when I used to live in Uzbekistan. I've got a nice cedar tree here from Lebanon, which was a recent trip. Just recently, actually, like October, I was there doing some work for Johnson & Johnson. Lots of little gifts from my students in the past. I've got Christ the Redeemer there from Rio de Janeiro. I took a group of students there last year.
Cool.
What else? You can see I have a lot of compact discs.
Yes,
and,
let's talk about these CDs.
So,
what's that?
First,
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 6?
Yes, and they're each 200. So, so first of all, dear listener, I still buy compact discs. Call me crazy in a world of MP3s and MP4s, but I love the physicality of compact discs. I also prefer the sound quality of compact disc over MP3s. We know that there is sound loss on an MP3 because of the compression algorithm. But I still use compact discs. Yeah. What else can I tell you? Lots of things about my life living in England. So I have my degrees, and then I was a varsity hockey player when I lived in England. So
I got
some hockey stuff, and then I have the degrees from other universities which I attended and from which I graduated. Yeah.
Let's actually take a step back. Us rosters call it an odyssey of how we ended up where we're at. Could you give us a quick rundown of how you ended up here at Ross teaching?
I can give you the quick and dirty one or the slightly longer. But I started out as an engineer.
Okay.
And like a lot of engineers here in the MBA program, I got tired of engineering, and I decided that although I still wanted to leverage my technical background, I needed the MBA to move into a management position within a technical company. Mm-hmm. However, as soon as I got into the MBA, I realized, or I probably knew before the MBA, but I had pushed it aside, what I really wanted to be was a teacher. Mm-hmm. So then the odyssey fork in the road was, do I return to school and get qualified to become a high school teacher? And I had thought about that, maybe high school math and science and economics. Mm. Or do I continue on and do a PhD in order to become a professor in a business school? And the obvious was I then continued on to do a PhD. How did I get to Michigan? My first job out of my PhD was at Washington University in St. Louis. I was there for 5 years.
Olin.
Yeah, Olin. Yeah. But my career had started to plateau a little bit. And that was the signal I needed to look for something else. I went back on the market, and Ross came a-calling. And 13 years later, here I am. Love it. Could not be happier.
Yeah.
Could see myself retiring from this place.
Really?
Yeah, it's that good.
It is that good.
Well,
from our perspective.
Ann Arbor,
yeah.
Ross, the University of Michigan overall, number 15 university in the world, best public university in the United States. My kids are happy. My wife is happy, except my wife's from Louisiana and the winters start getting her down.
Yeah.
But I've learned my lesson. If I take her somewhere warm around February, I'm golden.
Yeah. Reminds you the months before.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I know professors here at Ross also do quite a bit in the research arena. Do you want to just quickly talk about anything that you've been working on or you worked on in the past?
So as just a little background, if our MBA students don't know this, generally speaking, professors sit on a three-legged stool.
Mm-hmm.
One leg is research, one leg is teaching, and one leg is administration. And the length of those legs varies depending on the professor and his or her career choices and desires. My teaching leg has typically been the longest of the three legs, although I was the director of the part-time MBA programs, evening and weekend, for 4 years.
Uh-huh.
So during those 4 years, my teaching leg remained as long, and then I bumped up my my administrative leg. Research-wise, I, funnily enough, although I'm a marketing professor, in the past 5 or so years, I've been doing a lot of research into education.
Ah.
So pedagogy, internationalization of higher education, educational administration, some kind of op-ed editorial style articles about the future of higher education and so on. I am the co-editor of a series of books. I think I'm up to 10 co-edited books now.
Wow.
With a couple of colleagues from other universities, and each of the books focuses on a different aspect of higher education. For example, I'll just pull one down here.
Mm-hmm.
There's a nice one. It's on, this was, I'm particularly proud of this one. This is called Learning Space Design in Higher Education. I hosted a conference here at the University of Michigan,
mm-hmm.
and it was partly funded by Steelcase, which is headquartered over in Grand Rapids. It's the world's largest office furniture manufacturer, and it has a big educational division, which manufactures furniture for universities and schools.
Yeah.
And this is all about how we need to think very purposefully about how we design our learning spaces.
Mm.
Right? There's a lot of research in curriculum design, how to design the curriculum, about pedagogical design, how we teach. But it seemed like the final frontier was this notion of physical space. How can physical space actually impact how students learn, how professors teach? So that's what this book was all about.
Very interesting.
I
have noticed in my 2 years here at Ross that Ross, from the student perspective, seems to attract a certain type of student.
Yes.
So we're more, I feel more well-rounded than a lot of the other top institutions that we are, you know, give back, paid forward type mentality.
Yes.
Do you see a type of professor that Ross kind of attracts and holds on to?
Ross has a very WYSIWYG, it's a WYSIWYG kind of place. What you see is what you get. There's no pretension, there's no East Coast, West Coast air of putting on something fake. What you see is what you get, and it's no surprise that we have a very high yield rate, because when people come for GBR, it's like, this is for me. Fair enough, there are some people who say, this is not for me, but the vast majority say, I love it here.
Yeah.
It's a culture which attracts a certain type of person, and that person is, dare I say, kind of Midwestern oriented. And that doesn't mean Midwestern geographically. I would say it's more Midwestern values. Strong work ethic, competitive, but, you know, this whole collaborative competitive or competitive collaborative.
Yeah.
I think that is so true. You're absolutely correct. We have a pay it forward mentality. It warms my heart every time you go down into the Winter Gardener on the second floor and there are second years doing mock interviews with first years, or second years saying, I did my summer internship at Kellogg, this is what it's all about. Mm. That's great. I'm not sure you get that at places like Wharton or Berkeley, so I love that part of it. When it comes to professors, I think that professors are also attracted to Midwestern values. They're attracted to the big small townness or the small big townness of Ann Arbor. A lot of people end up here because they don't want to live in a New York City or the Bay Area. They want to be in a mid-sized city which has everything you ever want to do, but, you know, to get from one side to the other takes you 15 minutes with traffic.
That's
right?
Even on game day.
Even on
25 minutes.
Okay,
yeah.
add a few for
add
game day.
Add a few
day.
For game day, yeah.
Professors generally, of course, depending on their three-legged stool, will also be relatively selective about the kinds of schools which are attractive to them. Ross, because it places so highly in all categories, teaching, research, and administration, it attracts people who want to perform excellently, right? Mm-hmm. It is a school of excellence. You know that. It's a school of excellence in all activities, hence the rankings on the MBA, hence the number two ranking in the BBA program, mm-hmm. PhD program is highly ranked, executive MBA, executive education. It attracts people who want to perform at the highest level, but with certain cultural values. Mm-hmm. I think that is a combination which you don't see it everywhere.
No?
No.
No?
No, and I've taught a lot of places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier in your Odyssey about the Yaffe series.
Yeah.
I think that's when we maybe first met.
We first met,
yeah.
Exactly.
And you were interviewing a fantastic marketing mind. I believe it's you and Marcus are teaming up to do this program.
Correct.
So for those that don't know, can you give a quick overview?
Yeah. Marcus Collins, whom you know and is my great friend and colleague here, he and I are the co-directors, and this first year of programming, we've been focusing on the Yaffe speaker series.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, having been to them, that what we've really tried to emphasize this year as our theme is what we call the confluence of culture and commerce.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been bringing in people who sit at that confluence of culture and commerce, meaning, how have they moved culture along through commercial activities, and vice versa, how have commercial activities been influenced by cultural changes? And so the first speaker you might remember was Leanne Longo Callahan, who managed Beyonce's media empire, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody would disagree that Beyonce has been a cultural force.
Yes.
And has changed the way commerce is conducted. And similarly, I think commercially, Beyonce as a commercial entity, as a brand,
mm-hmm.
right? She has changed culture.
Yeah.
the sayings which we have in pop culture, the clothing which we wear, the body movements, yeah. You know, like, you know, put a ring on it. Yeah, exactly. So that was our speaker series this year. Will we continue next year in the same theme? I don't think so. I think we'll probably mix it up, but we've got some good speakers coming again end of this semester.
And just to quickly name drop some of the other names that you had a chance to speak to: Frank Cooper III,
amazing
CMO of BlackRock, now also worked for BuzzFeed, PepsiCo as well.
NASCAR.
Oh yeah, that was an awesome story.
Yeah,
just going in there and changing, try to rebrand NASCAR. Awesome conversation.
Yeah. Kenny Mitchell,
yes, VP of McDonald's.
Yep.
For branded content engagement. Very cool series. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you and Marcus do going forward.
Yeah, we've got two coming up. Keep your eyes peeled. We're gonna keep it a secret for now.
Am I getting exclusive content?
No.
All right. Well, very, very cool. We're very excited to hear about that. Lastly,
yes,
I had a chance to take, you know, your class, service marketing class, fantastic class.
Thank you. You haven't seen your grade yet, though.
I have not. I might change that part. You spoke so open and honestly about your home life, your extracurriculars, all the very cool things you got a chance to do.
Yeah.
The John to Professor John Branch.
Yeah.
So I would love for you to just talk a little bit more about what makes you tick as a person, your home life.
So I'm glad you said that, because I'd like to think that students can distinguish between John the person and John Branch the professor.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder with some students if they think that professors like magically appear in the morning, teach their classes, and then disappear with, you know, like a pumpkin at midnight. But we're real people, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that professors have a lot to give in personal relationships, as long as students realize that personal relationship that they can distinguish between the personal and the professional, and that they don't try to mix them up, right?
Like,
because we have so much life experience. And so in any case, I'm glad you mentioned this. I have three children and a wife. I met my wife. She's American. I met my wife at Cambridge, University of Cambridge, where I was completing my PhD. My wife also has a PhD from the University of Cambridge. Her specialty was at the time early childhood education, and her dissertation focused on how children use computer technology in children's museums. My three children, Henry, Georgie, and Charlie, boy, girl, boy. Henry is 17. He's in grade 11 and about to enter grade 12 and then be leaving for college. Georgie is in grade 9, and then Charlie's in grade 7. Mm-hmm. All three are great kids, you know, very active, as you would expect from helicopter parents like their mother and me. I have two big hobbies. I do a lot of woodworking.
Mm-hmm.
Woodworking and like DIY honeydew things around the house. In fact, we bought our house. It was a 1980s, I call a crazy cat lady house. She had 9 cats. It hadn't been updated since the 80s, so it had, you know, light blue Kohler fixtures in the bathrooms and shag carpet and whatnot. I completely rebuilt the whole thing myself.
Wow.
Come to my house, everything you see, the flooring, the drywall, the electricity, the plumbing, the tile work, the windows, the roofing, the siding, everything I did. It took me 8 years.
Wow.
So I'm a big DIY guy. Now that the house is largely done, although some of the things which I did 8 years ago now need to be renovated again, it's like when you have a big lawn which you have to cut the grass, like you finish cutting and then you got to start cutting again on the other side. My other big hobby is I rebuild old sports cars. So I have a couple of old sports cars, and I'm working on them right now. This is a big hobby. My plan is to build myself a man cave second garage for all the tools, and specifically for the car. And then I'll just go out and hide and work on the car.
Yeah?
Yeah.
For all the car people out there, what are you working on?
I have a 1963 Porsche 356B.
Ooh.
Yes.
The B is important.
The B is important because there was the 356A, B, and C. So I have a B. And for people in the know, they understand that there were not many differences, but enough differences to distinguish between the models. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to know, but it sounds like a very cool car.
Super
I might
fun.
Have to look it up.
See that little blue one up there in that little plastic case?
Yeah.
That's a 356, yeah.
Ah, it's very nice.
Yeah.
Maybe we could put some pictures in the notes of the podcast or something
sure.
like that. Yeah.
Sure.
Very cool. We have one final section. We call it rapid fire.
Okay.
So I'm just going to ask you either or. You tell me which one you prefer.
Got it.
Monopoly or Trivia Pursuit?
Trivial Pursuit.
Ooh, Lloyd Carr or Jim Harbaugh?
Lloyd Carr.
Music or podcast?
Music.
Of course, music. 800 CDs over here to say that. Comedy or drama?
Comedy.
Comedy. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Wall Street Journal or Twitter?
Wall Street Journal.
And
The Economist, actually. But anyway.
finally, ebooks or a good old-fashioned paper copy?
Definitely. I'm old school. I gotta feel the tangibility of the paper.
Yeah. All right. So of these 800 or so CDs over here, I know this is a hard question. Do you have a favorite?
I do. So you've caught me. I'm right now. I'm in a Snow Patrol mood. I've been doing the entire catalog of Snow Patrol, if you know Snow Patrol. You don't know Snow Patrol?
I don't know Snow Patrol.
Oh, man.
Are we good?
I could fire one up for you here.
Do you have a favorite song? I can get Chris to throw some music on during this part.
Okay, you ready for it? As soon as I play it, you'll know it. Here
okay.
we go.
Oh, I do know this song.
Sing along.
I didn't. Do it all. Everything. I love this song.
Absolutely brilliant. Northern Ireland group.
Yeah. I feel like I always hear like at a bar or like a local. I'm not actively playing that song on my playlist. That's why I didn't know the name of them.
Well, added in, they've got like 9 or 10 albums. Mm-hmm. That album, I think, was number 3 or 4.
Okay.
So that was the one which really broke them in North America. Yeah.
Well, that's all the question I have. I want to thank you for a
It has
a
been my pleasure.
Interview.
Anytime.
Madre.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Sorry to keep you waiting.
Oh, no, you're fine.
It's a conference call with my buddies at the Aspen Institute.
So
we're talking about doing a conference here on this fall. We did one in October that I thought was quite amazing and hard work. and now I want to do another one. That's just really fun to work with. But
yeah.
Conferences cost a lot of money and are kind of crazy.
There's a lot of moving pieces usually.
Yeah.
But they come together. It's really cool. It's really exciting.
This one felt like magic. It felt like it went about as well as anything like that could.
Mm-hmm.
We were we had like 100 people, 50-50 academics in the real world. We had all these like nonprofit and labor leaders and business leaders, and they do not normally mingle.
No, not at all.
And then we had like philosophers. Our opening panel had Liz Anderson, who's chair of the philosophy department here, and she wrote this book about why is work so horrible? Why do employers get to be so awful to people? And so she's got a whole book on this topic.
Is it improving though? As far as care for workers?
No, it's only getting worse.
I hear all the horror stories about, people in the factories, burning up heat, locking the doors, locking them in and stuff. It hasn't gotten any better.
Yeah, it is not getting better. Certainly to some extent the labor market has gotten enough tighter that you have to be at least minimally plausible, but in a lot of these cases, it's undocumented workers.
Okay.
Things that involve killing animals for hour after hour
and
gutting them, those American citizens are often don't take those jobs.
No.
But yeah, it's pretty. It's a funny world out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
Well, that's a nice way to start the conversation.
Yes. How about them Lakers?
Yeah. Right.
So I'm Jerry Davis. I'm the associate dean for business and impact at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan.
Yeah.
And my role as associate dean is to make the path legible for students that want to have a career in impact, who want to have sort of a bigger impact in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so trying to help people visualize what they can do while they're at the Ross School and beyond if their goal is to have a social impact. And another big part of my role is to try to find a way to translate faculty research insights into impact in the world. So take the ideas that come from faculty research and find a way for that to change practice, to change policy, to basically improve people's lives out there.
Mm.
My favorite current example, since we're recording, we are launching an impact studio. And this is intended as a way to train students, MBA students, as well as other professional students on campus from law and public health, policy, social work, education, information, to work as interdisciplinary teams to turn research insights into enterprises that can take on big problems out there.
Okay.
So our opening example is Eric Schwartz is a professor in the marketing department as a machine learning algorithm that can help identify which houses in Flint are most likely to have a lead service line so that you can remove that and put in a copper one that's safe.
Wow.
And he's got a method of figuring out which houses are most likely to have a lead line running from the house to the street. Mm. There aren't any records of this. You can't go to the Flint City Hall and say, show me all the lead service lines. Mm. You have to kind of make an educated guess based on other background factors. And so he's got a pretty cool algorithm that updates every time you dig up a new pipe and says, that one's lead, that one's copper. The algorithm gets more and more accurate so that you can invest your resources most effectively.
Oh, wow.
It turns out that people say America has 100. America has 1,000 Flints waiting to happen.
Wow!
There's so many cities in this country where there's lead lines, and all it takes is like one bad flush of water that doesn't have chromium in it.
Yeah,
that the lead starts coming out.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, and it's like so. It's basically all of these cities that are more or less close to the precipice saying, how do we take this on before we have another humanitarian crisis like in Flint? So he's got sort of a method to approach this. But how do you get that out there into the world?
Yeah.
Like, so a for-profit business can scale. You can get investors and you can blow up quickly. Mm. So that's one way to take these insights and turn them into impact in the world. But on the other hand, citizens might be more trusting of a nonprofit organization.
Yeah.
You might be able to recruit the kind of people you want more effectively if it's a nonprofit. You might be able to get foundation funding or other ways to get the resources you want, and so maybe that's a way to go.
Yeah.
Or maybe it should be a piece of open source software that you write in a way that it's like Linux or Wikipedia or Apache or something that lives out there so that others can improve it, and then it's just available for anybody that wants to get at it.
Yeah.
Or maybe it should be like an executive education program where you get the municipal water managers to come to Ann Arbor, Michigan for a week, meet their peers, learn some methods for using this technology, and then it's sort of a completely different model. So for-profit, non-profit, software, education, and that's the student's job. Is to help figure out, like, what is the best way to take these insights that happen in this building and sort of blow them up in a way that makes the world better.
Wow. So, that is super cool.
Thanks. Weird.
Is that MBA, BBA? Who are you tasking that?
That is an MBA thing.
An MBA thing. Okay.
Yeah. So we're really MBA plus other professional school students,
okay.
And right, so we're going to be pretty adamant that we want to make sure that we've got like a social worker and a public policy person.
Oh, that's super important.
Yeah. The problems in the world. Like business brings a really important Swiss Army knife. You know, we've got our own toolkit. We're good with the discounted cash flow analysis and aligning the incentives.
Yeah.
Social workers really understand how to interview and connect with constituencies in the world to better understand their needs.
Yeah. I mean,
they've got some really enviable skills that I would love to import here.
Yes.
The public policy people know, well, that's not even going to be plausible because here's the regulations around that, here's the way policy gets made, here's the people you need to connect with.
Yeah.
And so, like, if we put all of you together in a group that is like, I don't follow a lot of Marvel movies. So
that's
so
the Avengers.
Yeah, like
the Avengers. Yeah, that's so you've got Iron all the different Man, Thor, all of them together. Yeah,
right. You've got all these superpowers together, and you're like unbeatable. Yeah. And so that's kind of the thinking here. Wow. As you know, like yeah. Michigan has 100 graduate programs in the top 10.
Yes, we do.
I mean, we are good at everything, mm-hmm. and so you want to make sure that in your education here, you've had a chance to connect with like the best social work school in the country. They're really good at what they do. Yes. Like this amazing law school and public health school and education school. So this is kind of a vehicle taking on impact, you know, problems in the world, like trying to have an impact. That's a great vehicle to convene people who come from really different backgrounds. Sorry, that was a long rant. But I've been thinking a lot about this.
I am going to enjoy this conversation. I really am. That is very cool. That seems like it's going to be a fantastic program. I'm really excited. I'm sure the people listening are excited too. And we'll put obviously all the information and stuff like that in the notes afterwards. But I want to take a step back.
Yeah, please.
So we are, for those who are listening and not here, we're in your office.
Uh-huh.
And I always find it so interesting when I walk into a professor's office, I feel like it's an extension of themselves, you know? So to get a chance, you know Jerry a little bit more, can you just kind of talk to the people about what I'm seeing right now in your office? Is there anything in particular that you wanted to call out or excited about?
I'd say the thing that stands out is there's about 1,000 books piled up all over my shelves.
I was trying to count, about 1,000 at least.
There are a lot of books. Wow. Yeah.
So we here at Ross, you know, our students, we have to practice our Odyssey from beginning to end, talking to companies, networking, things like that.
Yeah.
So I would like to know what brought you to Ross.
Yeah.
But, I mean, can you give me kind of your Odyssey, you know, 5 to 10 minutes, or 3 to 5 minutes of, you know, how you got here?
I'll give you the 1 minute
the
version.
The 1 minute.
So I grew up outside Detroit, and I didn't go directly to college. I dug sewers for a while. I worked in a factory. I was a short order cook for a while.
Really?
Yeah, and kept being told, you really ought to go to college. And what people meant was not, you're smart, you should go to school. It was, you suck at digging sewers. You should go do something weak people do.
Cut it in construction, huh?
So I went to community college for a couple of years, transferred to Michigan, finished here with a degree in philosophy and psychology, which my mom called pre-unemployment. took a year and worked on research, discovered that I really, you know, here at the University of Michigan, discovered I loved doing research. I loved working with smart people.
Mm-hmm.
So I went off to graduate school in California. Okay. So I was 5 years at Stanford. Then I taught at Northwestern at the Kellogg School for 4 years.
Okay.
And then at Columbia University in New York for 3 years, and a year back at Stanford at the Center for Advanced Study. Moved here in 1998.
So I've
now been here for 21 years.
That was a good football year, wasn't it?
Was it?
Was that Woodson in the... No,
I have to admit.
Oh, Notre Dame.
No, I don't actually. So I actually hate football and know nothing about it.
Really?
In spite of being going to school here, I have attended 2 football games ever in life, and I'm never going back. So.
Are you not a sports guy? You're not a
not
football
at all,
guy?
Especially not football. But So Michigan's a funny choice for me because I'm actually here for the ideas and not the sports.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a group. There's a group of people that, you know, they just
somewhere
hear from
on
minds.
This campus that are more focused on the classroom thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So brought you here to 98 and you've been here ever since?
Ever since, yeah. And it's been great. I got so I'm a professor in the business school. I also have an appointment in the sociology department. And nominally I'm connected to organization studies, complex systems, Institute for Social Research, handful of other things. One thing you discover at the University of Michigan is everybody has 6 appointments.
Yeah.
So whenever you go to a department on the website, it looks like there's 50 people there. There's actually only 3. Everybody else is just put there because of their joint appointments.
Wow.
No, edit that out.
We have the inside scoop.
But it is a very interdisciplinary place. Like the boundaries here, it's really easy to connect with people in architecture and kinesiology and social work. And it's kind of great. I mean, if you have a taste for, I mean, if you like go to the buffet line and want to try one of everything, this is kind of the place for that.
Wow.
And so I've kind of, for me, that's an environment that I thrive in. Research-wise, My last book was called The Vanishing American Corporation.
Oh, yeah, see it right there.
Navigating the Hazards of a New Economy. So that is among the 1,500 books spread around this building. I've written five of them published five of them. And this is the last one. It's trying to get at the question of why are public corporations disappearing? So there's about half as many now as there were 20 years ago.
Yeah.
That should be worrisome.
Yeah. And I'm guessing the half are significantly larger than they have been in the past.
So it's kind of a mix. That's the weird thing. In fact, you're getting at some of what the research is on is when we say giant corporation, we use the words really loosely because if you drill down on the notion of large or giant, what actually counts? So how many people work at Netflix? Global company. They operate in 150 countries.
Yeah.
They have a new bizarre movie and series you're not going to see every day.
Yeah.
So they seem gigantic. So how many people work at Netflix?
So I'm guessing, I think it might be a slightly leading question, there's not many. So 2,200? Is that...
2,200?
Yeah.
Well, all right. You're even leaner than
I am. Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, that's real
impressive.
Lean. Okay.
Yeah. So there's 5,500.
Okay.
But 600 of them are temps.
Oh wow.
So and if you remember, if you're old enough to remember Blockbuster, they used to have 90,000 employees.
Wow.
Netflix put them out of business. So is Netflix a giant corporation if nobody actually works there?
Yeah, that's true.
And think about LinkedIn, Yelp, any of these companies. None of them crack 10,000. So they're pretty small employers.
Yeah.
Even Facebook, last time I looked at their 10K at about 25,000, which is a very small number for a $500 billion company. So the giantness is really tricky. Mm. And part of the question that I think we should be wrestling with, as a business school and as a set of researchers is, what do we do in a world where corporations have hardly any permanent employees?
Yeah.
Like if you can't climb a career ladder at a General Electric or a Westinghouse or an Eastman Kodak or a Borders or a Circuit City or like so what do you do in that circumstance? Yeah. Like how do you make your way upward if there isn't a clear path?
And
like, this is your life. Is how are you gonna be making these choices about you'll already start in the middle class, but like imagine, someone graduating from undergraduate. What advice do you give them about how to make their way in this world? And does business have a responsibility to help create kind of a legible map for people?
Mm.
Yeah. So that's a bunch of what I'm thinking about.
So I was thinking back to when we met. I believe we were both on a panel for Detroit R&B. We had a conference last year, and we were speaking about, the changes and I don't know, just the excitement that's what's happening in Detroit right now.
Yeah.
You're a huge advocate for it. I don't know, can you kind of just talk to what draws you to that city, why you love it so much? Where is it going,
Yeah, I think Detroit is the most exciting and interesting place in the world. And I've been everywhere else. So this is like, I'm not just making that up. I've been to Prague.
Yeah.
but Detroit is kind of an amazing place for any number of reasons. I got a personal connection because all of my grandparents moved to Detroit to make cars.
Oh, wow.
The personal story that I'll be retelling tonight. The personal story is my father's father grew up on a farm in Indiana, got drafted into the Army in the First World War, and when he got out, he said, I am not going back to work on the farm.
Yeah.
He moved to Highland Park
worked
at Ford's Model T factory from 1919 for 50 more years. Yeah, became a welder, Arsenal of Democracy, worked on the Ford Tri-Motor. And his life was just absorbed by the Ford Motor Company. He had his own legible path. Mm. But like within his biography, you could see that transition from rural to urban, from farm to factory. Mm. And so there's like a miniature version of what the whole country did. Mm. So Detroit just became, the richest and most interesting city on earth in the 20s. It was amazing. The Detroit Institute of Arts has amassed this astounding art collection. I just had a friend visit from Tokyo. She was staying in our place in Detroit, and she's on Facebook saying, I've just been to the best museum in America. Let me tell you what's going on. And she was just blown away by the quality of the art there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, so it's faced a lot of challenges because the car makers have largely evaporated. but there's this base cultural layer of entrepreneurship and interest in Detroit that I have never seen anywhere else.
Wow.
And people see this, the t-shirt that says Detroit versus everybody.
Yes.
And like your first take on this might be, oh, they don't like the rest of the world or something. It's Detroit versus everybody. But that's not the way people take it in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
It is, we're all in this together. We're all here to uplift each other and to make the city better off. Mm-hmm. We want to be sort of self-sufficient, self-sustaining, and to help each other out.
Mm-hmm.
So you see this thing in Detroit business where we were working with this woman that's that started a cosmetics company. And her cousin was doing a stand-up comedy show near Eastern Market. She said, oh, come on over and see it because I'm going to be operating a booth there.
Yeah.
So you come into the entryway and there's like four or five booths with somebody selling olive oil soap and somebody hand-knit sweaters. And it's kind of like that pervasively. Like the norm is you help other people out.
Yeah.
If you got a friend that's starting a business, you give them a leg up. If somebody moves in next door, you sort of help them understand how the electric company operates and where they might be able to find some help to work there. And that's just like, you just don't see that anywhere else that I know of.
Yeah.
Like my favorite example is, well, one of my many favorite examples. So the guy that started Cipino's Pizza at Eastern Market, which is amazing, delicious pizza, the best pizza you've had outside Italy, he's not open on Sundays and Mondays. And so we asked him, so what happens on those days? He goes, well, actually, I will lend the place out to people that want to do pop-up restaurants.
Oh, wow.
We say, what? And he goes, yeah, just give them the key and say, look, just clean up and lock up when you're done.
Yeah.
And students asked, well, but those are your competitors. He goes, no, they're not. I'm not open on Sunday or Monday. And they said, but what if they open up a restaurant next door? He says, great, then there's more things to come to, and then I have more places I can try out during the week.
Yeah.
So from his perspective, it's like, it's all good. These are not my competitors. We're all making the place better.
Wow.
And that norm just seems like pervasive in the city, that everybody wants the businesses to succeed, and they do whatever they can to help each other out. Mm. That's just like, it's so Midwestern, but it's so Detroit.
It is.
Like, if you go to Silicon Valley, when you start a business, everybody's waiting for you to fail and then laugh when you fall down on your butt.
Sitting there with a pink slip.
Yeah. Like to say, having lived out there, I like to say that in the Bay Area, the physical climate's warm, but the emotional climate is cold.
Yeah, it's the opposite.
Here, it's the opposite.
It's the opposite. Wow.
Yeah.
So I think we spent probably the last half an hour or so getting to know Associate Dean Jerry Davis.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to hear about Jerry,
the
man, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, from a personal perspective, you can be as open as you want or not. But, I mean, how's your family, you know, married, kids, anything like that? What do you do for fun?
Yeah. So one of the fun things you discover at the University of Michigan is all the faculty seem to be married to each other.
Okay.
But we don't all have the same last names. It's a bit of a fun game to figure out who's married to whom. So that's true for me, too, but I'm not going to. You all have to figure out who it is.
Okay.
I got two kids. One's a first-year student in college on the West Coast, so
West
she's
down.
Back for spring break starting tonight, enjoying herself. My greatest worry is that she becomes a sociologist and doesn't learn Python and SQL, but we'll see it. And then a son who's 25, lives in Washington, D.C., and is heavily involved in politics there. So he's working. He's doing SQL and Python coding at his job, doing like data analysis of voting data, and then doing political things, like doing canvassing door-to-door, heavily involved in politics. I won't say in what direction, but
Any hobbies? What do you do for fun?
Yeah, so I used to play in a band. When I was a college student here, I used to play in clubs now and then, and my band had the best name ever. It was Ivan Pavlov and the Salivation Army.
All right.
I think that is the best. Yeah. So we were terrible music. No, we were adequate. We had our moments.
Yeah.
But really a great name.
What instrument did you play?
I played keyboards and occasional guitar. Yeah.
Okay. Any guitar?
No, too much for me. Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be a great picture.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah. Okay. It was pretty great. And, Other Abbeys are just nothing. I mean, yeah, it's like the research and the teaching. Honestly, for me at this point, the dean job is pretty consuming. But I love writing and doing research.
Yeah.
It sounds insane because for a normal person, that's what you want to avoid. But like, I love writing papers and writing books and like writing things, trying to aim for a popular audience. Mm-hmm. That's been good fun.
Okay,
and we travel a lot. So I'm a little bit worried that when we are all judged for our contributions to this planet, and someone looks at my frequent flyer credits, that I will pay for my contribution to climate change. I'm a vegetarian. I ride my bike to work, but I do travel a lot. Yeah, okay. So
it all weighs out. It all evens out. You're good.
Thank you for your service.
Well, I think that's good. We can leave it there. Cool. I think this is a great conversation. Yeah, I appreciate
thank you so much
it.
For it, Jason. Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you to Professor Branch and Professor Davis for chatting with me, and thank you all for listening. Business Beyond Usual is brought to you today by the University of Michigan at Ross School of Business. Executive producers are Sheila Lal, Christopher Enke, and me, Marjay Smiles. Our team of NBA 2 producers are Charlie Grant, Jamel Culler, Adam Fasher, Leslie Chang,
Andres Fuentes Affleck,
Stephanie Simpson, Dylan Corey, and Jason Rock. Thanks again to Jonah Brockman for editing help. Until next time, I'm Marjace, and this is Business Beyond Usual.